Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Mullen, joined by Craig Bogger. John Rurink will be joining us in a couple minutes to speak with Emily Diebendorf, the Executive Director of Equality Michigan. She's going to be talking about the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act expansion. And Craig, after what we saw this past week with Jim Murray of AT&T saying he's not going to be continuing to be engaged in this particular issue because of some attacks that he saw on the media last week, I got to say, this thing is in dire straits. I'd almost call it a dead duck, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that this had been, you know, there'd been buzz about this for almost a year, and then within a couple of days, it just seems like it's slowed to a halt, and you don't really see a path forward for it. It still seems, though, that there are votes to do kind of the all-inclusive Elliot Larson proposal, but it's just that leadership doesn't want to do that.
Well, because if leadership put in something like that, I think they'd get considerable blowback from conservative members of their own caucus.
No doubt about that.
You know, and we already saw Todd Corser. He already put out an email over the past, Friday? He put out an email calling for Bulger's head. He's not even in the legislature yet, you know. So, that's just, I know he's kind of an extreme case, but it's a bit of a microcosm of what we see in that caucus.
I mean, there's a wide array of members in the House Republican caucus who simply don't want to vote on this. So that's one of the challenges.
And so even if the speaker's out the door, he still needs their loyalty as it relates, and their trust as it relates to other things on the agenda. And that's why I think it's going to be extremely difficult, if not impossible.
Well, when you may be asking them to also vote on a large increase in fuel tax, they probably don't want to take two votes that they really don't want to take in a couple weeks.
Well, let's talk about that, because that is the thing that Governor Snyder wants more than anything on earth. But if he's going to get that through the legislature, he's going to need some cooperation from Republicans who have now gone through a weekend of press coverage with the press saying, hey, look, really, this is a doubling of your gas tax. And, the constituents back home aren't all that excited about that idea.
Yeah, and I think any member that you talk to that is being honest with you will tell you that they're hearing considerable blowback about raising taxes to that level. So it kind of makes you wonder, what's the path forward on that? What are they going to do? I mean, it seems like there's a possibility in the House that what passed in the Senate could advance, but geez, there aren't a lot of House Republicans, I think, that are going to support that.
So Interelectoral College, this reform from Pete Lund to change the Electoral College process in Michigan so that the winner gets a majority of Michigan's Electoral College votes, but if it's a close race, the loser will get some. Now, I think that there's some interplay here because if Republicans are having trouble voting for an expansion of the gas tax, he'll need Democrats, and if Democrats smell that they are needed, all of a sudden the price for poker goes up and more things go on the plate. So, Interelectoral College. And hey, listen, we're going to push back here. We're going to make this one of the things on the table and one of the things you guys are going to have to take off the table, you Democrats, in order to get something done.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting how all of these issues are now interrelated. So this key issue of road funding. What are we going to do on roads? Well, if the Democrats don't cooperate and help the Republicans answer that question, they could see some repercussions on some of these other bills. It could be the Oakland County Executive Election Bill. It could be the Electoral College. Prevailing wage is out there. There's a bill on that. It's in the Republicans' priority for the session. That it could be that one. But still, you have Richardville and the other chamber and Snyder voicing disinterest in some of these. So how seriously can they push those things?
And let's talk about the things that are getting left behind, too, as we're talking about these items. I don't know if we're going to get the Senate Bill 2, this advanced practitioner bill that Mark Jansen wants out there. The EAA is still out there. The Educational Achievement Authority is still stuck in neutral in the Senate. I don't know if that's going to go anywhere because you got two chambers that are diametrically opposed on what that's going to look like. And then you've got this sentencing reform that Joe Hoffman wants. The Attorney General isn't happy with the entire package, and I don't know if the Senate's all happy with that package as well.
That's the fun of lame duck, isn't it? You just don't know what the issue is going to be the next day. You really don't.
No, you don't, because we also got, don't forget, no faults out there, too. And you've got Arlen Meekhoff, the incoming majority leader, just goes ahead and throws out a new bill on Thursday to have his own ideas on what we can do with no fault. We only got 3 weeks of lame duck. It's like we've got an entire session coming up, really, in the beginning of December.
No, it's going to be a busy 3 weeks.
Well, let's segue now into our interview with Emily Devendorf. She's joining us right now. Thanks for joining us today, Emily. Glad to have you back.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about the Elliott Larson expansion. It looks like Jim Murray from AT&T is going to pull out of this and take a step back. How is that going to impact this legislation, this session, and then the efforts to expand the Elliott Larson going forward?
We're not sure how it will impact the success of the legislation overall. We, of course, have two versions of the bill. We have one version that has sexual orientation only and another version of the bill that has sexual orientation and gender identity. We at least feel that Jim Murray backing out of the push for Elliott Larson will make it so there isn't as much pressure on legislators to try to pass the sexual orientation only bill, and we do feel like that is a positive step. Jim was putting a lot of pressure on legislators to pass the sexual orientation bill, and he had been doing that for quite some time, and that was something that we had said from the beginning we could not get behind, the statewide movement or the national movement.
One would argue that this is going to make things a lot tougher for you guys, though, to get something through lame duck. Would you concur with that?
I think that is a possibility, but I think that also the alternative was possibly only getting a sexual orientation bill through lame duck. That was the only thing that Jim wanted to see happen. So if that was the intention, if that was the chance that we had, that was not something that we were interested in. So we are happy with this, if that was the only scenario that we had a crack at, and that was what we said from the beginning. If the chance we had was sexual orientation only, then we intended to burn it down.
Just from a practical standpoint, is the concern if you only did do the sexual preference that you would never get the rest of the loaf?
The current concern is quite a few things. Sexual orientation only, we do think it would take quite a while to come back and get gender identity and gender expression covered. But also, there are a couple of reasons why we need gender identity and gender expression right now. The majority of discrimination that happens to the LGB, lesbian, gay, and bisexual community, is actually based on gender identity and gender expression. It's based on being perceived as gay, lesbian, or bisexual based on gender identity and gender expression. So we actually need those protections for the rest of the community as well, not just for the transgender community, but also because nobody in the movement at the state level or at the national level is willing to leave behind the trans community. We've done that before. We did that with National ENDA in 2007. It became a complete catastrophe for good reason, because there is no reason at this point or at any point in history for us to create a hierarchy of human beings. There are plenty of things that I think that we can negotiate on in public policy. I don't think that we can negotiate on the value of human beings and who deserves to have their suffering stopped. And in this case, we're talking about people we should protect from discrimination in employment and in housing and in public services, and people who should just have access to those things based on whether they're qualified to do their jobs or whether they should be able to eat food or have shelter. And these are the very most basics of rights.
If this doesn't happen in the lame duck, give us your odds of it happening with the new set of leaders coming in and sort of the composition of the new legislature with the next session.
If this doesn't happen in lame duck, there is really absolutely no chance, I think, that we will be passing this in the next legislative session, which does mean that we would have to probably put this on the ballot in 2016.
Are you at all concerned, because there's been talk about putting same-sex marriage on the ballot as well, would there be any interplay between those two, either positive or negative? I mean, it's a lot of issues for...
Yeah, and we're just starting to talk about those things, because there really was a great chance that we were going to see this pass. We had Republicans and Democrats talking about passing Elliott Larson and how they wanted to see this happen. We had corporations across Michigan talking about how they needed to see Elliott Larson passed for the good of all of Michigan. So we really were feeling like this was going to happen in Michigan for the first time in 30 years of trying to pass this. So we hadn't considered what trying to pass two things on the ballot would look like. It would be a complicated issue, and we would have to start to talk about both those issues at the same time when we haven't been. We haven't been trying to talk about those messages in a complementary way. We've been considering them two very different things, where they're both still very, very basic things that everybody should have access to. We do think we're probably going to have a resolution for marriage through the courts. I don't think we're probably going to have to put it on the ballot. That said, of course, if we don't get a resolution through the Supreme Court, and we do expect one by June of 2015, by summer of 2015, the end of this next session, Supreme Court session, if we don't, then of course we will make sure that we go to the ballot, because it's as soon as possible situation in order to stop that struggle.
You had mentioned that you had received some support from big corporations and businesses wanting to see this change. Are you concerned about any backlash from the beating AT&T took on the transgender, that maybe they're not going to want to play on this anymore if they feel like they would be subjecting themselves to attacks?
You know, we're not, because the Michigan Competitive Workforce Coalition actually came out at about the same time confirming their support for a fully inclusive Elliott Larson, and what that means, and they clarified, one that includes gender identity and gender expression. And in contacting AT&T, what that actually did was to contact national AT&T. In contacting AT&T, AT&T came out with a very specific statement in support of an inclusive Elliott Larson, and regardless of how far we got in the process, that they wouldn't support anything passing unless it included gender identity and gender expression. Essentially, these corporations have in their own inclusive non-discrimination protections for the transgender community, protections for gender non-conforming individuals. So this is really what corporations feel need to see happen, need to see in place in Michigan. And anything that goes against that is already not living up to their own corporate values. What Jim Murray was doing was going against what his own corporation had already stated was their own corporate values, and he was the one rogue player in the Michigan Coalition for the Michigan Competitive Workforce Coalition. Everybody else was on board. His national corporation was on board. It was Jim Murray that was out on his own island. So we don't see them as feeling attacked. Everybody else was together. It was Jim Murray, the individual, that was trying to work on this other agenda.
Speaker Bulger's staff says that he's been working on these bills he introduced last week for, I think, a year. Mm-hmm. I was kind of curious, how closely have you guys worked with him? Have you had meetings with him? How have those gone?
Yeah, we have had a coalition of lobbyists, and really this has been at least a year-long process, longer than a year-long process, where we've been working closely with Republican leadership, we've been working closely with corporations, we've been working with faith leaders, we've been working with the Democrats. The reason we have had so much faith when we've been interviewed by the press for a year is because there has been so much communication on all sides talking about these bills and talking about what a priority it was. And I think that's why we see at this point some urgency on the Republican side to introduce something. Very clearly, it is a priority now to the business community to see something passed. The message has been sent that this is what's good for Michigan. The message has been sent to Republicans. Republicans have now been asked the question enough about whether they're going to do something. They've now answered enough that that discrimination is wrong and that it's good for the business community. They now feel like something has to be done. I think the danger now is that they feel like something has to be done, and they aren't necessarily going to want to pass the quality bill that we feel has to be passed. And that is why we felt that Jim Murray lobbying on that kind of a bill was so detrimental to the the initiative and the process.
Some of the feedback I heard back is that by not willing to consider other options, this is more about self-preservation for a group than it is about actually wanting to see something positive get done. I wanted to get your reaction to that.
We heard that, and we half wanted to laugh, and half were incredibly insulted. One of the cliches that we have in the kind of work that we do is that we work to put ourselves out of a job, and I know that's an incredibly cheesy thing, but we are exhausted. We are exhausted, and most of us burn out after 2 years. I've been here for 4 years, and some would say I am half awake and doing the job at this point. Really, we absolutely are doing everything that we do for ourselves. We are doing this to achieve equality. We're very focused on our own community, but we are fighting for trans inclusion in this bill because even if Title VII covered the trans community and protected them fully, it would only protect them for employment. It wouldn't protect them for housing. It wouldn't protect them for public services. There is no reason not to ensure that they are protected and given these basic rights with the rest of the community. There is no reason to leave them out there vulnerable, to leave any community out there targeted. Why would we leave part of our community behind? Why would we split us up? Why would we try to make sure that we were fighting that much longer? And besides the point that this is one issue, we aside from this issue, have no other rights. We have so many other things that we need to win. Unfortunately, we are going to be around for a lot longer to check a whole lot more off the list. And that is not a good thing. That's a bad thing. And after we win this, and after we win marriage, we're going to have to struggle to educate people about the fact that there are those other things because they won't realize it enough to make sure that we have the resources to fight those battles. So this is a big challenge to us, and it's one we wish we didn't have to fight, but we sure do want to exist in order to fight those things because they cannot exist for us to be able to stop that suffering.
You mentioned the year, over a year you guys have been working on this, and Frank Foster has kind of been at the center of this and been, you know, had various degrees of being open about what he was working on. On a 1 to 10 scale, how would you grade his work on this bill? He didn't introduce the bill that you guys had hoped he would.
Yeah, Frank Foster has been great. He has been a really wonderful legislator, and he had every intention of introducing the best version of the bill. His heart was in the right place. He has a history of advocating for LGBT rights. In college, he passed LGBT inclusive policies. Hmm. This is not the first time he has gone out on a limb for our community. What it came down to was lobbying and LGBT, the influence of Republican leadership on his ability to introduce LGBT policy and him wanting to introduce something that passed and that could pass through his Republican leadership. So we understand the politics of that, and we empathize with Frank Foster. We don't think any less of him as a person. He has certainly been a great advocate for us this far along. We think it's unfortunate that he ended up introducing the bill that he did.
Real quickly, last question I wanted to get in here was your thoughts on RFRA, RFRA, including that into the package. Is there anything that could be crafted in that regard that you guys would be okay with?
No RFRA is necessary. It's absolutely not necessary. And to try to tie something like a RFRA to us gaining these basic protections that just about everybody else has is so insulting. And I thought it was great what Senator Richardville said, where and he his staff said on his behalf that he didn't feel like any religious protections, additional religious protections were necessary, and whatever the community felt that we needed in terms of gender identity is what he would listen to and what he would be open to. We don't need additional religious protections. We certainly don't need them in order to add discrimination protections for employment for those who are being targeted right now. This is basically just a way to bargain, and that is manipulative, and we think it's reprehensible. We don't really understand how that's not being called out more. We don't need more religious protections added in Michigan. And most people across the country can see that RFRAs are just being thrown in there to scare the public. This is being used as an excuse to add a RFRA to tie this to a civil rights bill so that they can say they're doing something for the community and also get some unnecessary far-right religious protections added to Michigan at the same time.
Very good. Emily Diemendorf, the Executive Director for Equality Michigan, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Lauren, you're back in the office.
I am.
That is very exciting. You were at the Capitol Committee this morning, and lo and behold...
Capitol Commission.
Oh, yeah. Committee's the old name. Now we're doing a commission.
Yes.
There was actually news there today.
Yes. There was a request from a citizen to place a nativity scene on the Capitol grounds for the month of December.
Oh, boy.
And the commission is questioning the legality of doing such a thing, as this has become a controversy in many other states. And they requested help from the Attorney General's office, who wants them to pay them for their research and efforts.
It's never easy, Craig.
No, I strongly feel a slippery slope argument coming on at some point today. If we allow this, what's next? What's the next thing we're going to allow in the Capitol Run?
We're going to need Hanukkah candles out there, and oh my goodness gracious. You know, no Christmas should be complete in a highly political environment without a nativity scene being planted out by the Capitol.
I mean, I guess. I mean, the tree is already there, but apparently somebody wants to go a step further.
You know, we've got silver bells in the city. Are they concerned if anybody's going to try and trash? Nobody would trash a nativity scene during silver bells, would they?
It wouldn't be up before silver bells, because silver bells is in November, and this guy wants it to be through the month of December.
Oh, okay. That reminds me, silver bells is this Friday.
Silver bells!
Oh, my gosh. That means a quick edition on Friday, right?
Yes.
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 Quick edition, just so all you listeners out there know. Quick edition on Friday, because we have to be out there hitting the parties on Friday Friday evening.
So basically, if you want to dump documents, Friday, late Friday afternoon is the time to do it. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, shoot. Maybe
no,
I should.
Sorry,
oh, my God. Actually, I got to cut this out of the podcast. Thanks, Greg. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malone. Take care.